Are you ready to talk Padres baseball?
We've got you covered.
Tonight, it's Sunday Night Baseball as the Padres take on the Pirates, an event that's making Bill Center so excited he wants to sing.
Something,
who lives in a pineapple under the sea? SpongeBob SquarePants.
And because of the big Sunday night audience, Jesse Agler wants to use the opportunity to make a big, big announcement.
But I hear she's a very big baseball fan, and she's even seen the show a couple of times. So Blooper feels very confident that before her concert at Petco Park later this summer, Taylor Swift will be on Padres Social Hour.
Blooper's guaranteed that.
He is absolutely guaranteed that. Right, Blooper?
No.
I don't know. Come on.
Now, broadcasting from the AMR studio, it's Padres Social Hour, presented by United Airlines, with your hosts, Jesse Agler and Bill Center.
You know, that reminds me, we have not had a Taylor Swift update in a few days.
No.
We're going to have to get one from Blooper later in the show. Welcome to Padres Social Hour, presented by United Airlines. Petco Park, we've got a 6:10 first pitch tonight. 6:10 on a Sunday. This is new, this is different, this is unusual. But it is what it is. They had the Rock and Roll Marathon here earlier today. And so downtown was a zoo. I live right around the corner from the ballpark, Bill. It was a zoo. You would have not wanted to have a 1:10 game.
Right. Well,
this was the right decision.
Trying to get in here, even when I came in about 2 o'clock, I mean, it was, you could not move.
It was crazy.
Right. It was.
But now it's all cleared up and you're good to go. So it's definitely a good thing.
Come on down.
This is a 6:10 game. Two things on the Rock and Roll Marathon. Three things. First, congrats to everybody who participated and did it. It's awesome.
I mean, Chris Button.
That was going to be number two. You've stolen the thunder.
I'm sorry.
So congrats to Chris Button, our colleague here at Fox Sports San Diego. She ran the half marathon, and she's working tonight.
Right.
Like, she's doing the game.
She's
with Dick and Mudd and Pomerantz and Sweeney. Like, Chris is on air tonight. In just like an hour, you'll see her on your television, and she ran the half marathon today. But far more impressive than that is Harriet Thompson, the 92-year-old woman who did the full marathon. 92 years old, and she did the full marathon.
I couldn't even walk 26 miles.
I'm serious.
I know. That's phenomenal.
Seven hours.
And great story in the Union Trib this morning by Don Norcross on her as she prepared for this marathon.
It's unbelievable. 92 years old.
I know.
And she did a marathon. Not a half, not a 5K, which would have been incredible.
Well,
if she would have done a 5K, I would have said that's an amazing thing. She did a full friggin' marathon.
Well, Chris Budden was talking in the dugout before the game about how she was feeling pretty good about herself, and some 80-year-old woman ran right by her.
It's incredible.
I know. It's like,
talk about making us all feel worthless, right? You get the 92-year-old woman doing the marathon. It's incredible. Hey, God bless you, Harriet, and congratulations. That is an all-time accomplishment.
Right.
Seriously, that's like, to me, that's up there with a 56-game hitting streak.
Well, I guess she does go into the Guinness Book of World Records. She's the oldest person to ever complete a marathon.
Unbelievable. Right. So congratulations, and that is outstanding. Not outstanding, the result of last night's game. The Padres dropped it 5-2 to the Pittsburgh Pirates. That was the third game of the four-game series. So the final game is coming up tonight. Odrysimer Despaigne will be on the hill against the left-handed starter for the Pirates, Jeff Locke. So hopefully the Padre bats can kind of figure out that left-handed thing again, because they were beating up the lefties for a good chunk of this season, and you hope to get that kick-started one more time. So we'll talk about last night. We'll talk about tonight. Also, man, hey, hats off to our buddy Kurt Bavacqua, who last night on the post-game edition of Padres Social Hour
had
two Hall of Famers. Eddie Murray was sitting right where you are sitting now. Eddie Murray. And next to him, Raleigh Fingers. First of all, both guys looked unbelievable. They were great, man. They were insightful. They were funny. They were great with the fans, from what I understand. And we'll play back a couple of interesting conversations those guys had last night. But that was really, really cool on Kurt's show, having Eddie Murray and Raleigh Fingers.
I always thought that Eddie Murray had one of the greatest looking swings that I have ever seen. Just so smooth. Every time he swung the bat, it just looked like the bat was part of him. I always loved his swing more than anybody else's.
Did you like it better from the left side or the right side?
I liked it better from the left side. And I always think that left-handed hitters look better when they swing.
That's
the right.
A thing, right?
Right.
That's an interesting thing, and you're absolutely right. Like Ken Griffey Jr. doing the same thing from the right side, it wouldn't have looked as pretty.
No.
Why is that?
I do not know, but I have no – there's got to be some science, but his left-hand swing – I mean, even – Tony Gwynn was, Tony Gwynn was an exceptional hitter, but there were times when Tony would have like a funky little swing, or he'd see something and he'd throw the bat at the ball and he'd hit it the other way and get a base hit. Eddie Murray, his swing was always like picture perfect every time.
The longevity of his career, too, was just incredible. And the things he was doing in his late 30s into his early 40s, like a productive guy.
Right.
And with power still. A Hall of Famer. I mean, what else do you have to say? Both those guys, Raleigh Fingers and Eddie Murray. So we'll hear from them coming up in a little bit. That was a fun show last night. I hope everybody got an opportunity to take it in. As a reminder, you can join our conversation today on Twitter. Just use the hashtag PadresSH. You can also go to Padres.com/social hour to watch or listen to the show and participate in an online chat. Thanks to Mike Grace for hosting the show the last couple of nights while I was up in the radio booth. A couple of nights ago, great, exciting win for the Padres. Derek Norris, the walk-off grand slam. We were all pumped up. We were all fired up. And you really, really, really wanted to see the fuse lit.
Right.
And it didn't happen last night.
That's a great way to put it. I thought that walk-off win, and by the way, would you like to say that what a nice call. Nice call on the walk-off win.
Thank you. It was fun.
And I love the part. I want just right after you made the call, which was really good, where you said something like, "Well, a single would have worked."
Yes. Yeah. All he needed was
right.
a single.
All he needed was a single.
It's a fact.
Right. But yeah, I agree with you. I thought that win would yesterday fire them up, and they'd come out. And I thought last night they were a little lethargic, and I can't quite get the feeling.
Were they lethargic, or was Charlie Morton really pitching well?
Charlie Morton
was
pitching really well, yeah. but they didn't. I mean, it just was not. It was let's. Not, I won't say they were lethargic, but it was a game that didn't have a lot of energy to it. Maybe it was Charlie Morton shutting them down.
All right, so the seesaw sort of continues here for the Padres,
right.
And tomorrow is June. That would be a great time to get off the seesaw and kind of go on a roll. But that's something we've said several times. You know, so far this season, even as recently as the other night after the game in Anaheim, you said, hey, maybe this will be the win that sort of kickstarts
things. That's the thing. You've seen sparks. You've seen the fact that they are able to go out and do it, and now it's just do it. There's got to come a time where they do it.
Yeah. Stop talking.
Right.
Shut up, guys like us.
Right.
Go on that roll. Now, look, I'm not in panic mode by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
It's early on here, but you would like to see them get on the kind of roll that the Giants have been on as they sort of have ascended up the standings in the National League West. That's sort of the thing you're waiting to happen at this point. And, again, as always, no time like the present to get it started.
And any team, I mean, it's interesting because you talk about a roll. You look at the Houston Astros, who nobody gave a shot at doing much before the start of the season, and they're on a great roll. I mean,
they're unbelievable right now.
Oh.
Dallas Keuchel, who we saw, the left-hander who pitched the day game here against Andrew Kashner that way back Wednesday game, the guy is like unreal. He may end up starting the All-Star game for the American League. He shut out the White Sox yesterday, a three-hitter. I think his ERA, I've got it here somewhere, his ERA is down to 176. 176 ERA as we head into June. And, I mean, it's going to be either him or Felix, maybe Sonny Gray from the A's, to start the All-Star game for the American League. You're right. That kind of role is what we're waiting for.
Right. And I think they're capable. It just got to happen.
All right. That's a good way of putting it. Tyson Ross, last night, he battled, I think was the word Buddy used a few times.
Right. And, you know, Tyson, to me, last year he was spectacular. This year he's solid. But we haven't seen the spectacular. And it's to me, it's interesting because we keep waiting for the spectacular. He's pitching well enough right now to win. He got off to a terrible start. He had the bases loaded in the first two innings, and a couple of nice plays got him out of it. But, again, the first inning, Middlebrooks makes that error. The run wouldn't have scored. We could still be playing. There's been a lot of tough breaks for this ball club.
Yeah, so you're hoping eventually they swing back the other way. All right, we'll talk more about last night's game. We'll certainly get to your questions on Twitter using that hashtag PadresSH. I want to play back now a little bit of last night's show that Kurt had with Eddie Murray and Raleigh Fingers. Just kind of a fun story here about Raleigh Fingers and how he came up and sort of, you know, his ascent to the Hall of Fame.
And kudos to Kurt for getting these two guys here for the postgame show.
Absolutely.
That's amazing.
Tells you, as we say in the business. Right. He's a much better guest booker than Seth is.
Right. tells you a little bit something about Kurt, how other players in the game view him.
That's a very, very good point. He is a very well-respected man, and you can tell that by his relationships.
Eddie Murray drove down from L.A. to be on this show.
Yeah. And Eddie Murray, the Hall of Famer.
Who was not great with the media when he was a player.
Well, Kurt's not the media.
Right.
He wasn't having to sit here and talk to some idiot like me. He got to talk to Bavakwa. But you're right. That's a credit to Kurt.
Right.
That's
credit
exactly
to Kurt.
What that
Absolutely.
Is. Absolutely. No question about it. You know what? We'll play that for you when we come back. How about that? And you get a little listen to something Raleigh Fingers had to say last night. Plenty more to come on this Sunday evening edition of Padres Social Hour. Join the team on Sunday, June 14th for U.S. Army and Army National Guard Appreciation Day presented by USAA. All military and their families receive 50% off tickets to Sunday's game against the Dodgers. Just go to Padres.com/military, Padres.com/military. We'll take a break, come back, more Social Hour and Raleigh Fingers right after this.
We're back to the AMR studio located in the Western Metal Supply Company building. It's more of Padres Social Hour.
Welcome back, Padres Social Hour presented by United Airlines. We're here at the AMR studio at Petco Park with Bill Center. I'm Jesse Agler. Hey, I said earlier we haven't had a Taylor Swift update in a little while from Blooper. Blooper off the air guaranteed that before her concert here later this summer, he would have Taylor Swift on the show. And then when I asked him about it on the air, he was like, oh, I never said that. He kind of went into his shell. But I've really pushed him hard on this one. I said, come on, man, this has got to happen. Because he didn't get Mick Jagger. He didn't get Keith. He didn't get any of the Rolling Stones.
I think if he fails again, you know, as a booker, his time's up.
Wow.
I'll tweet at her again today.
Okay. So what's the update, though? So you did tweet at her a couple of weeks ago, right? And I think your exact wording of the tweet was, will you come on my show? Hashtag Padres SH.
Yes.
I'll
try and explain it a little more in the next tweet.
Yeah, you know, jam in what you can to the 140 characters. All right, so the update is that you're working on Taylor Swift.
Yes, I'll keep tweeting at her.
Okay, good. All right, so he's working on it now. You know what we say in the business? He's efforting Taylor Swift.
Efforting?
He's efforting. Okay. That's what he's doing. He is making an effort, and he's attempting to get her on. All right, I said last night Kurt had such a great postgame edition of Padres Social Hour with Raleigh Fingers and Eddie Murray. I'm always so fascinated by the different ways guys sort of end up where they are, particularly when they end up in the Hall of Fame. You think of Raleigh Fingers, and you think of pitching, and you think of closing games out. That is not how he began his professional career. And, of course, he's not alone in that way. Trevor Hoffman is another great example of that. So listen to a little bit here of Raleigh Fingers last night discussing his rise through pro baseball.
Raleigh, you were a pretty good hitting pitcher, but you didn't start out as a pitcher in the minor leagues. You played other positions, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I signed in 64 as an outfielder. Our American Legion team went to the World Series in Little Rock, Arkansas in 64, and our team won it. And I led the nation in hitting that year in American Legion, and all the scouts saw me there, and I also pitched. So some of the scouts wanted me as a hitter, some wanted me as a pitcher, but Kansas City came up with a nice contract bonus, $13,000. And I went to spring training as an outfielder and a pitcher, and I hit okay, but someone thought that I'd be a better pitcher. So I had to end up sticking on the mound, which someone knew what they were doing. So I still had a couple of home runs in the big leagues, got a hit in the World Series, so I could still swing the bat okay.
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, that's cool, first of all, that Raleigh Fingers was on our couch. But also that, yeah, man, he comes up as an outfielder. And, you know, somebody in the athletics organization was like, why don't we try this pitching thing? Well, let's put our energies towards that. And what do you know? Hall of Fame career.
I had the privilege of seeing Raleigh Fingers pitch, and it was an awful lot of fun. He had an attitude much like Goose Gossage later. I mean, when he had the ball, it was you and him, and it was not like, okay, we hear so much now about, you know, command and positioning the pitch and everything. It was, I'm going to throw this thing right by you. I mean, he was a real competitive. I loved seeing Fingers. I loved seeing Gossage. I loved seeing guys with an edge like that pitch.
I think we all do, right? As fans, that's what you enjoy. You like when that guy's got that chip on his shoulder, that attitude out on the hill.
And it's almost like he's squeezing the ball so hard that it's not – it's like he's throwing a rock at you. It's okay, the baseball, but it's more like, no, we're in combat, and I've got this rock, and here it comes.
Yeah, oh, very cool. So Raleigh Fingers last night. Eddie Murray was there as well. We'll play back another interesting moment from the show with the great switch hitter Eddie Murray coming up in a little bit. A little bit more on last night's game real quick. Tony Watson, the left-handed reliever for the Pirates, that was impressive.
Right.
That was very impressive.
And he's now worked 21 straight scoreless innings and 19 appearances. I mean, last night, what he was throwing, as we know, because we saw three straight guys strike out, was unhittable. I mean, it was really good stuff.
Yeah, that was good. And then Melanson, Upton reaches.
Right.
And Kemp put a charge into one in right field in the ninth inning, and you thought for a moment there was a shot there.
Right, but it fell just a little bit short. You know what was interesting a couple days ago is when you talk about Watson, Steve Finley and Mark Kotze were talking in the Padres dugout about when they were players in the 90s, that you would – each team had somebody that threw in the 95 range. And Finley was saying, now you look at the game, and each team's got four or five guys that throw in the 95 range.
Yeah.
And they just keep bringing them in from the bullpen, one after another after another. And it is incredible to see – how the velocity has stepped up over the years.
Well, it's funny you mentioned, you know, we're talking about Raleigh Fingers here and sort of the evolution of the way the bullpen roles has happened,
right,
you know, over the last 30, I guess, years, really at this point when things started to change. And Buddy's talked about this, you know, when he's been asked about it. Like, you know, it used to be that if you were a relief pitcher, it was just that you weren't good enough to start.
Right.
That's all it was. Now you have guys that they're closers in high school sometimes, certainly in college. Houston Street was a great collegiate closer. You don't end up in the bullpen a lot of the time. You are a bullpen guy. Like, that's your actual role, and it's become so specialized and so good, and that's got to be part of the reason, you know, scoring's down a little bit, right?
Right. And the early relievers back at the, well, Mike Marshall before even Fingers, that they would not come in for one inning. They'd work two or three innings, and it was a different concept. And the relief role and the closer has just, it's been the fastest changing part of the game, I think, over the last 20 years.
Yeah, so what's the next change? What's the evolution of this? I mean, you've got
we're seeing it, I think.
Okay.
We're seeing the defense with the shifts and everything, and now that changes the dynamics of the game, too. I think the next change is going to have to be hitters that are going to use the entire field because they're going to have to do something to beat the shift, or they're just going to beat themselves into the ground.
When we hear from Eddie Murray in a little bit, we're going to hear him talk about that a little. I agree. You know, and I think this series, I don't know why, for me it's really crystallized it or really brought it into focus that something's got to happen. Because, I mean, you're seeing guys hit balls on the screws,
right,
up the middle, whatever, and it's right to somebody.
Right.
So there's got to be an adjustment made, and that's not an easy thing to do. We can sit here and talk about it all day. That could be a years-long process for an individual hitter,
right,
to sort of train himself to be able to do different things.
Particularly left-handed hitters facing the shift. The second baseman now might be 35, 40 feet deep in the outfield, and they've got it so that he knows how, if he gets the ball, how he can get it to first and still beat the runner. I mean, it's not like they're just playing three guys in the left on the right side. The second baseman is much deeper than I've ever seen anybody play.
When you think about the reaction to what Rob Manfred said on the very first day of his term as commissioner of Major League Baseball, which was that, yeah, in my head, I wonder if getting rid of the shift or making it illegal would be – people freaked out, mm-hmm, right? And now I think with the shifts being even better in 2015 than they were in 2014 – and in 2014, they were way better than they were in 2013. Like, I think that probably 2 months into the season, there's a lot of people that maybe, you know, ripped on Manfred when he said that and are now kind of like, well, there could be something done because you're right. I mean, the hitters are going to have to make adjustments. They're
right.
Going to have to do things differently than they've ever done before, and that's not an easy process to go through for these guys.
No, if you've pulled the ball all your life, it's very hard to change. Now, one guy that I was surprised earlier in the season, I saw somebody throw a shift on Yonder Alonso. And here's a guy that goes to left field a lot, and he beat it. Pedro Alvarez a couple nights ago beat it.
Yeah.
And that's what I think
two
hitters have to do. Once once they start beating the shift and making the adjustment of going the other way, if you're going to have three infielders in the right side, I'm going to left. And, yeah, sometimes the one guy over there is going to get the ball, but you get it through far enough, and that destroys the shift.
You just got to change the numbers game a little
bit
there.
You have to make the adjustment. The hitter has to make the adjustment.
All right, as long as we're talking about potential radical changes to the game, another one was floated this week that I want to talk to you about when we come back. You know, there's been a lot of discussion this year, especially with the new commissioner, about scheduling in Major League Baseball, the possibility of going back to a 154-game season as opposed to a 162-game season. I want to talk about that and the role and the place in the game, if there is one, for the scheduled doubleheader. That was a big topic the other day after Jim Capel wrote about it. We'll discuss that when we come back. Also get to more of your tweets. You can use the hashtag PadresSH. You can also go to Padres.com/social hour to chat with other fans. And we'll hear from Eddie Murray talking about the art of switch hitting, learning to switch hit, and also going the other way and trying to beat the shift. Hey, if you want to guarantee your opportunity to purchase tickets to the 2016 All-Star Game right here at Petco Park, become a Padres season ticket member at the gold or platinum level and lock in your chance to get tickets. To learn more, visit Padres.com/ASG. Talk a little baseball scheduling when we come back. Padres Social Hour from the AMR studio.
We're back to the show that gives you everything San Diego Padres. It's Padres Social Hour, presented by United Airlines.
All right, welcome back to the AMR studio, Petco Park Kids Fest, a late Kids Fest, usually.
Yes.
You know, these Sunday games are at 1:10, tonight at 6:10. And if you didn't even realize that, and maybe you're rolling around or sitting on the couch and saying, what am I going
to
do tonight? There's no Mad Men.
Come to the ballpark.
What am I supposed to, like, yeah, that's it. Come on out. 6:10, first pitch. Odorizzi Mayer-Despaigne on the hill against Jeff Locke as the Padres try and earn a split in this four-game series against the Pirates. The Mets will be here tomorrow, Tuesday, and Wednesday for their only visit to Citi Field so far this year. Talking about radical changes, potentially radical changes, you know, banning the shift, and that's one. Darklighter, our buddy Richard, he is not on board. He is not on board. He tweets to us using the hashtag PadresSH. He is still against banning the shift. He says he thinks it's stupid. I agree. I don't want to ban the shift, but it's not as crazy sounding to me now maybe as it was, you know, at the end of March.
I don't want to ban the shift. I think that you should be able to do what you want to defensively, but I do want to see hitters adjust to it, and that gets rid of the shift.
I think that's kind of the idea, right? We give it a couple of years, and we see if hitters do adjust.
Oh, they will.
And there you go. And if they don't, or if it's a really big thing, then maybe you start about, you know, thinking about legislating something in the rules. But you got to allow the thing to sort of progress naturally at first.
You will find hitters now to beat the shift. And that's where we might see, okay, if you can't beat the shift, there might not be a spot for you up here.
Well, if you can beat the shift, they're not going to shift.
Right, exactly.
So you need a guy who's unshiftable.
Right.
Remember like Moneyball A's in 03, 04? Their big market inefficiency or whatever was finding these guys that maybe don't have high batting averages, but they get on base a lot because of walks. Maybe now, if you're a scout and you're looking around, you're trying to find a guy that really sprays it to all fields.
Hits to all fields, right.
Maybe that's like the big thing.
And I think somebody like Yonder Alonso, I think his stock is going to be up a little bit now because that's what he does. He hits the ball to all fields. Tony Gwynn's stock right now would have been through the roof.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was always
through the roof.
Yeah, no, but you're right.
Right, but I mean, yeah, you're going to shift against Tony Gwynn? I mean, even with equaled up, you couldn't beat him.
Wouldn't matter.
But that's the type of ball player that I think is going to, you know, you're not going to shift against guys that can hit to all fields, and those guys will hit for average, and we'll see a change.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. And it will be a multiple season sort of thing and evolution.
It's not
going to
happen
it.
Overnight.
That's it. Darklighter says, by the way, if we're talking about radical changes, he's still on Team Robot Umpire.
Yeah, so am I.
Yeah, I love that you're on Team Robot Umpire. You want automated balls and strikes.
I want automated balls and strikes. I've just had it with these guys on the strike zone.
Love it. Love it.
That would be my radical change.
You are a radical.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
You're a revolutionary.
Well, when you start talking about schedule.
All right, let's talk about the schedule. So Jim Capel wrote the other day about doubleheaders, which for a lot of times, not really in my lifetime, but anybody older than I am,
Right.
Yeah. The scheduled doubleheader was part of the deal.
Right.
It was a way to get people to come to the ballpark because they'd pay for one game and they'd see two. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, at the time, games were taking two and a half hours, not three and a half hours. So it was a completely different sort of commitment from a fan standpoint. But if you had more scheduled doubleheaders, or if you had some scheduled doubleheaders, you'd have more off days for the players. So they're kicking around the idea of a 154-game season. And now if you played maybe one scheduled doubleheader a month per team, or maybe one at home, one on the road,
right,
you know, you could get in an extra day or two off over the course of a month. Those certainly add up. Your thoughts as a fan, first of all. Like, let's say you don't have a fancy gold press credential that gets you into any major league ballpark, which you do have, you fancy person, you.
Right.
But if you didn't, and you were a paying customer and just a big baseball fan, and all things equal, would you be interested in committing to a doubleheader on a Sunday or a Saturday?
I loved doubleheaders when I was a kid, and we saw a lot of them. Of course, that was the Pacific Coast League at that time in San Diego, but I loved the idea of going to doubleheaders. And, yeah, seeing two games and just spending the afternoon there out in the it used to be at Westgate Park or Lane Field, Westgate on the grass berm. Yeah, it was great. It was a completely different feel seeing a doubleheader than just a regular game. One of the problems, though, with the teams now is that they're drawing a lot more fans on average.
Sure.
And a doubleheader isn't going to really help you financially like it used to, because you're already getting those big average crowds every game. So I don't see the doubleheaders, but I would like to see maybe the season shortened. And also, if you shorten the season and you shorten spring training and maybe you get it back to mid-April to the end of October, not stretch it into November.
I think that's the key thing, and the doubleheaders could play a part in that,
right,
too, because you can start shortening things. You know, I agree. I think you talk to people around baseball, and, you know, November, it feels wrong.
Right.
You know,
months
are arbitrary, right? At the
right
end of the day, it doesn't really mean anything. Like, today is May, tomorrow's June. Our lives will not be all that different tomorrow, most of us. But there is something about, you know, World Series baseball in November where it doesn't feel right. And in 2001, which was the first time it happened, that was a unique circumstance. You know, the September 11th attacks, you know, put the season on hold. And so, okay, the Yankees and the Diamondbacks are playing into November. But when it sort of ends up being scheduled that way because of the length of the season, I think that makes a lot of people around baseball feel a little bit uneasy.
Right. And I don't like baseball. Spring training used to be 6 weeks, because you needed that time to get starting pitchers ready to throw 9 innings.
Yes.
Nobody's going 9 innings anymore. I think you could take at least a week off of spring training, maybe 2 weeks, and shorten that too, because once you're ready to throw 7, you're ready for the start of the season.
Not only that, but a big reason spring training was always as long as it was because the guys had to get in shape.
Right.
And now, I mean, they're machines.
Right.
They work out all year. You know, it's not like back in the day where they needed a second job because their salaries weren't high enough, you know, and they're selling cars in the off season or delivering beer, whatever it was, and then they needed spring training to get in shape. They're coming in ready to go.
Right.
You know, and you're right, the pitchers need to be stretched out, but you can accomplish that in a shorter period of time. I'm with you. A shorter spring training would make sense,
right,
too.
And the first 2 weeks in April, it is so cold in many of the cities like New York and
yeah,
Chicago, Detroit, where they don't have, you know, the ones that don't have the roof stadiums.
Sure.
And I don't like that kind of baseball. I don't think that is baseball. And I think if we start maybe the second week in April, or mid-April, around the 15th, I think mid-15th of April through October, 154-game season, shorten everything up, would be a much better product.
I agree with all of that. All right, we got some good Twitter stuff coming in. We'll get to those questions when we come back. In addition, we'll hear from Eddie Murray, who has some incredible stories when it comes to switch hitting. Just awesome stuff last night with Pavakwa from the Hall of Famer. As your hometown pet retailer, Petco is proud to partner with the Padres in Petco Park. Thank you, San Diego, for sharing in our passion for pets and baseball. Petco, the power of together. A couple of good Twitter questions and Eddie Murray when we return. This is Padres Social Hour, presented by United Airlines.
Welcome back to the AMR studio. Live inside Petco Park, this is Padres Social Hour.
Welcome back, Padres Social Hour, presented by United Airlines. With Bill Center, I'm Jesse Agler. We're here in the AMR studio at Petco Park, getting ready for the final game of this series between the Padres and the Pittsburgh Pirates, who have been a little bit of a thorn in the side.
Absolutely.
This week.
Could I say one more thing about the schedule?
You can say whatever you'd like about the schedule.
I want to also see a balanced schedule, because if we're going to have these two wild card, these two wild card teams, I don't want to play the majority of the team or the games in your division. I want to have it balanced so everybody at the end of the season has played everybody the same number of times.
I agree with that 100%. I don't need to see the Diamondbacks 18 times.
Right.
I don't need to see the Rockies 19 times. I'd rather see Pittsburgh another time or two. And the Mets and the Cubs and the Cardinals, et cetera.
Particularly when in this new world, the wild cards are coming from the whole thing, not from one division. So a good team in one division has a big advantage right now in the wild card.
I agree with all of that. Plus, it allows you, if you're a good team sort of running away, that you can pick on, you know, those really weak teams at the bottom of the pack in your division, if that happens to be the case. You want something really radical with scheduling, as long as we're talking about
it?
Ken Rosenthal the other day, our friend from Fox Sports, he wrote about the idea, and I don't know that he was endorsing so much as just saying, hey, what about this, of trying a split season. So you play a first half and a second half, like a lot of the minor leagues do.
Most of the minor leagues.
And you have a first half champ and a second half champ, and maybe a wild card from the first half and a wild card from the second half. And then it starts over at the All-Star break, and everybody's 0-0. So, like, you know, if you're a team that you think you're going to be pretty good and maybe you have a couple of big injuries and things are slower than you would have liked in the first half of the season, but those guys are getting ready to come back healthy, you're feeling good about the second half. And then the first half champ and the second half champ and the first half wild card, second half wild card, they meet in the playoffs.
Right. The only thing that does is that adds an extra layer of level of playoffs, because you're going to have more division champs. And
that's all logistics. You can worry. Right. You can figure that out. There's already as many teams in the playoffs as there are. You just, maybe you get rid of one of the wild cards and you say, you know, two from each, you know, in the National League, and, you know, two from the first half, two from the second, or I don't know, whatever.
Right.
Maybe you do have to add more teams. But what do you think about that? That's radical.
No.
Because that will change the way, it's, in a big way, how it's ever been done.
And what it also does is it keeps fans, you might be out of the first half, but you're going to be in the second half.
You get opening day twice.
Right. You get opening day twice. And, I mean, you're not going to have teams all of a sudden 25 games out.
Right. Which is nice when you go to the ballpark and you know your team's not 25 games out. I think it's a fascinating discussion to have.
I think there are a lot of fascinating ideas right now.
And if you're against that, I totally understand that. But if your only argument for being against it is, well, that's just too different, I need you to come up with a better anti-argument. I want to hear the anti-arguments because I'm kind of intrigued by it. I think it could get a little bit messy, you're right, with the length of the playoffs and everything. But I think it is a really, really fascinating concept.
Right. I love that the ideas are throwing out there. One thing I don't like about the doubleheader is now teams will be thinking, oh, we can do the day night where they tie up players. It's not
That's
really
no
a doubleheader. It's a day night thing, and so that they can get the extra revenue from two games.
You want a single admission, old school doubleheader.
Like old school, because it's not fair to the players to keep them there for 14 hours.
It's a crazy long day.
Right.
Yeah.
It is a really long
day. Or the
day.
Writers, as I'm sure you know.
Right. Well, yeah.
All right, let's hop out to Twitter. B. Klein checked in on the doubleheader topic. He says, I'm in. Who wouldn't want all-day baseball?
Right.
If you're a big baseball fan, you're right. What could be better? I remember one, you know, in one summer I went as a fan in college, and it was fun. I went with my best friend. We're both huge fans. We just sat there all day and watched baseball. But there were probably 10,000 people in the stadium, because if you're not a hardcore fan, that's a big commitment. That's a big commitment. It's everybody's trying to attract a casual fan, right? A doubleheader's got to be tough on a casual fan.
And you might. I mean, in the minor leagues, some leagues play a 9-inning first game and a 7-inning second game. Or both at 7. So there are a lot of different ways that you can look at this.
Now you're really going to make people's heads explode.
Right.
Big change in baseball. People, they freak out.
Yeah, it's a traditional sport.
Very traditional sport. Although it's becoming more progressive now, I'm telling you.
I know.
Get on the train. Rob Manfred not messing around. And I'm not suggesting that, you know, it's going to turn into ice hockey or anything, but he is a lot more open-minded than his predecessor.
Absolutely.
A lot more open-minded than his predecessor. And right now, he's in the listening phase. He's in the exploratory phase of his commissionership. And look, obviously, all of these things have to be approved by the owners. They've got to be approved by the players. I'm not suggesting any one of these crazy things happens in 2016, but it's being discussed. All of this stuff is being discussed.
I don't think it'll happen
openly.
It's not all going to happen at one time, but I do think we're going to see some sand shifting here.
Yeah, no, I think that's well said, sand shifting. All right, next tweet comes from Johnny, and Johnny says, hey, we should have more 5:40 Sunday starts. Well, a couple things there, Johnny. One, today's a 6:10 start, so I don't want you tuning in. Well, please actually stay tuned in. But don't be disappointed at 5:40 when the game has not begun yet. It's a 6:10 start. Second of all, the folks at the Worldwide Leader, they would have none of that. They've got an exclusive window for Sunday Night Baseball, and exceptions can be made like today because of the marathon, but generally speaking, you're not really allowed to schedule games on Sundays. Plus, you've got travel considerations a lot of the time.
And the other thing is I love day baseball, and you take away another – I mean, if you put all – Sunday games at night. I love day baseball. I don't want to lose Sunday day baseball.
Yep, that's a good one, too. That's a good point, too. I love day games. But I'll tell you what. I kind of like this as like a one-off. Just a little bit different out of the routine.
One time. Right.
What about twice?
Well, maybe twice a season.
Yeah,
but, I mean, we have the 5:40 games on Saturday. We already have an early start on
Well, not
on
every Saturday.
Not every night. Right, because now we get to the Saturday games.
Fox has their national window that they're trying to protect.
And then we're back to 7:10.
Yeah. So.
But I do like day baseball, and Sunday seems to be the day that we have day baseball. I don't want to give that up.
All right. You'd like to see 154 day games, wouldn't
you?
No,
I wouldn't.
Oh, you wouldn't?
No,
okay.
No. But I do like the opportunity to see day baseball at time.
I don't want to
turn this into and one of the reasons I like day baseball is it involves the kids more.
Yeah, that's important.
Right.
Gotta grow the game with the youths.
Right. But I remember as a kid being able to watch day baseball. And now that's one of the things I don't like about the World Series and playoffs. They're all at night.
There's a kid here, it's a 6:10 game. Comes out and sees it. There you go.
Okay.
So he's got an opportunity to watch the game tonight, even though it's 6:10.
Right.
Can we get him some baseball cards?
But 6:10 still it's early. You got
6:10's early enough.
Right.
Here, can we give this to the kid? Sorry. We keep baseball cards on hand sometimes for the kids.
That was a pretty good fling.
Thank you. You know, just flinging them out there. Big Ahi on Twitter says, I'm for a shorter schedule if the wild card goes to a 3 or 5-game series. And, yeah, I mean, when you're talking about the logistics of the whole thing, there's no question.
Right.
If they go to a 154, if they do a split season, if they do this, if they do that, there are going to be formatic changes to a lot of things.
And I agree. I don't – well, as you know, I don't like the one-card wild card game.
I love it.
I want a 3-game series.
I know.
Baseball is about series. It's not about one game.
You don't want to play in a 1-game playoff? Win your division. That's my answer to that.
No,
win your division.
But baseball has always been structured around the series,
mm-hmm.
3 games.
Yeah.
So you get to see a home away, and you also get to see 3 different pitchers.
I certainly understand with what you're saying, and I think most people agree with you. I am not most people.
I know. You're not most people.
But it's probably inevitable because more games, more money, et cetera, et cetera. And it is more fair, more equitable. People love fairness.
Right.
But you know what my mom used to tell me? Life isn't fair.
She told you that.
A whole lot. Quite frequently. A lot. Quite a lot. One more tweet, and it's a show thing. David says, hey, I just noticed, do the jerseys in the background change every game or different Padres Social Hour editions? Eagle-eyed David Renteria. Nice job. Yeah, we've got different jerseys that go up for the post-game edition. We've got a blue 98 Trevor Hoffman jersey that replaces the current home jersey for the post-game shows on Saturday night.
Wow.
Had you noticed that?
Actually, I haven't because I'm working still. I haven't been able to. And
do you have a DVR?
You know what? And that's the thing that I was saying that it just dawned on me
up.
That
yeah.
I could have.
No, that's fine. We'll set a season pass up for you. Blooper, we'll get it all figured out. We'll take a break, come back, hear from Eddie Murray. He was on that show that you didn't watch last night and that you did in DVR last night. We'll get that set up for you. Hey, you can use eCash to pay for concessions and merchandise at Petco Park and get cash back every time you load money. Download the MLB.com ballpark app or visit Padres.com/compadres to start earning rewards today. Take a break. Come back here from Eddie Murray right after this.
You want some Padres talk?
We've got that.
Padres Social Hour returns now, presented by United Airlines.
All right, welcome back to the AMR studio at Petco Park with Bill Center. I'm Jesse Agler. As you may know, we do this show every single day throughout the season, with one exception, the Thursday after the All-Star game. We let Seth have a day to himself.
That gives him a full day to try to reach Taylor Swift.
That's a great point. About a month before the concert here at Petco, 6 weeks, that gives him a great opportunity to get a hold of Taylor Swift.
No excuses, because he's got nothing else to do that day.
That's it. That's exactly right. But the other thing with the show is that after Saturday night home games, Kurt Bavakwa's got the post-game edition, the alumni edition. And last night he had Raleigh Fingers and Eddie Murray here, a pair of Hall of Famers. And Eddie Murray talked about switch hitting. And, of course, he is one of the absolute best switch hitters of all time. There's no debating that. You look at the home run numbers, everything else. One of the greatest switch hitters ever. Listen to this and when Eddie Murray picked up switch hitting.
You and I go back to Puerto Rico, where we first met, and we had one heck of a baseball team back then. And it was, I think it was the year before your rookie year in the major leagues. Is that right?
Right. That was the year 76. Actually, it was my first year switch hitting. And then that's why they sent me down or suggested that I go down to get a few at-bats. And I tell you, it ended up being an awful lot of fun. Actually, we made more money down there than we did playing in the big leagues.
Now, wait a second. What, you didn't start switch hitting until 1976?
Right.
So how many years in pro ball have you been already?
Two.
And before that, you never switch hit before?
Well, if you're in high school or we were wearing somebody
I'm not talking about messing around. I'm talking about switch hit.
As Ray Charles said, that's what it is, to mess around. You know, you're four for four, and, you know, you can't keep beating the kids up. So I would hit left-handed, and, you know, you would get a hit there and there. That's all it was.
So you were beating the pitchers up right-handed. Decided to put you in there left-handed.
Right. Ozzie Smith was another one. While we played in high school, neither one of us switch hit. Well, the way I looked at it, it was I knew I could do it somewhat. I felt great because it kept that right-handed fastball away from up under here. And then you have to show what you got here from that breaking ball. And, you know, it was just the best thing that happened for me. They gave me all the pitches I wanted to hit in the instructional league.
Were you a better hitter, right-handed or left-handed?
Right-handed, I almost hit 400 my first year.
Oh.
And, I had conversations with me. I always said you couldn't throw hard enough to make me hit a ball to right field. You could throw a ball outside and I would pull it. And so I never forget we played Jim Campanis. We used to play with the Pirates. This guy hit three rockets one night. He was 0 for 4. And they said, do you want people to play you like that? The only person that was on the right side of the infield, and that's way back then, was the first baseman. Everybody else was just – and he hit three balls just right on the screws and was 0 for 4. And I go, okay, here we go. I'm 17 now.
They had a
17,
shift, 18. Shift back then.
Oh, yeah. And they asked me, they said, well, do you want people to play you like that? And I go, no. I go, here we go. I'll hit some right-handers to right field, but all the left-handers are getting pulled. You know, it was just my mentality. I mean, you just couldn't, you know, throw the ball hard enough, I just think.
Eddie Murray, the Hall of Famer, talking about being shifted on as a 17-year-old and also picking up switch hitting after becoming a professional, his second year as a pro. Absolutely incredible. We got to take a break. When we come back, we'll wrap up this Sunday evening edition of Padres Social Hour presented by United.
From start to finish, it's the best 60 minutes of Padres talk you'll find anywhere. Now, from the AMR studio, it's more of Padres Social Hour.
All right, welcome back. 6:10 first pitch tonight. Despaigne on the hill. If you're watching us on Fox Sports San Diego, Padres Live, the pregame show with Mike Pomerantz and Mark Sweeney is coming up. Bill Center, I'm going to put you on the Cholula hot seat real quick here, and I'm going to ask you a name, and the question is, do you know who this guy is? You probably don't. I don't think most people do. His name is Lenny Marullo. Oh, you're shaking your head like you do know.
Well, I know because I didn't know until an hour ago.
Oh, okay, now you know.
Right, when you shared the story with me,
well,
and
now
it's fascinating.
Ruined the whole thing.
Going, no, I didn't know.
I was
who
setting
he was.
You up so that you could look all smart, and then you're saying I told you an hour ago, which nobody needed to know. But yeah, so Lenny Marullo is the last living Chicago Cub to have played in a World Series as a Cub.
Not anymore.
Well, yeah, he passed away.
Right,
98 years old. But think about that. There is now no living person who played in a World Series with the Cubs. Of course, they haven't been to the World Series since 1945, which blows my mind every time I think about it. But this is crazy. He's gone. I mean, and he lived to 98. That's a great life, obviously. But there is no longer a man on the planet who participated in a World Series with the Chicago Cubs.
That is amazing.
It is incredible. Cholula Hot Sauce will elevate the flavor of your food with its delicious blend of unique peppers and authentic spices. Cholula, the flavorful hot sauce with the iconic wooden cap and proud partner of the San Diego Padres. This one flew by. It really did. Thanks for hanging out, Bill.
Always fun.
Well, that sounded genuine. We're back to our normal time tomorrow at 5:30 before the first game against the Mets. Enjoy the finale against the Buccos.